Hey, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
I was doing the calculus on, is it hotter outside or inside with the windows closed? I don't actually know, but at least with the windows open, I can run a fan. So hopefully I won't die.
Yeah.
I just edited a very long podcast in this room, and it was a bit of a sauna.
Yeah, it's 4 degrees, 3 or 4 degrees warmer outside than in, but I just opened the window because I would like some fresh air now, please.
Yeah.
So I just finished a podcast, too.
Yeah, even if it's not hot, it's just the stale air.
Yeah. I turned on a fan, too, because I know our listeners enjoy it when there's
background
noise.
Yeah, I've got a fan going,
noise.
Too. Mine's a very quiet fan, though. Mm. I don't think you can even hear it.
Mine's pretty quiet, but maybe they can hear it. I don't know. Maybe they hear the birds chirping outside. I don't think there are any birds out there right now. We had a surprise... guest on our previous episode that people seem to enjoy at the end, where you said goodbye to me and your girlfriend in the background said goodbye Jason as well, because I think
she thought we were just hanging up the call.
She
doesn't listen, so she doesn't know the protocol.
She doesn't know the format
show.
that yeah. goes in, so I extended it beyond where that we had a lot of laughter afterward. Anyway, that was basically her last act as your girlfriend, because you got engaged.
That's
congratulations.
True. That's true. Thank you. She's insisted that now I refer to her as my ex-girlfriend, because technically she's no longer my girlfriend.
Almost said your girlfriend at the time, or your made
a very tragic
appearance.
Week. actually that did happen last weekend. There's actually, unsurprisingly, there's a technological component to this whole story, which some people asked me about on one of the member Slacks. Might have been the incomparable member Slack. But among other things, so this was a puzzle. I made a puzzle / scavenger hunt, which went to a variety of locations around our neck of the woods. And at each location, there was some friends of ours, and they would have a puzzle, and then she had to solve it, and that led her to the next location. But to kick it off, because it was Mission Impossible themed, I left the house and left a couple packages in the door for her, knowing she wouldn't be going out immediately. And I used a routine on the Echo where you can set, they added these routine features a while back, but one of them is to set a timer and have something happen when at a certain time. And you can even just have the Echo speak a phrase at a specific time. So I had it say that she had a package delivered, and she was very perplexed because she's like, I've never heard that happen before. So she went to investigate, and sure enough, there's, you know, a couple envelopes in the door, one of which was a greeting card. Now, you know those greeting cards that you can that you open and they play music because they have a little microchip in them?
Yeah.
I bought one of those from the store, and then I cut out the microchip, and I found online you can buy one of those that's recordable.
Uh-huh.
And so I recorded... Or more accurately, I had our friend Lex Friedman record a message that was the traditional Mission Impossible briefing.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is your mission. Should you choose to accept it?
How long did it take for you to explain to Lex what Mission Impossible was? And...
You know what? He said he knew what it was, and I didn't actually have to brief him that much, and he did several takes from me and did an excellent job.
Good for Lex.
So that, and then inside the puzzle envelope, there was a phrase to trigger the Google Home. To say verify me, and it would essentially like give back like a, you know, identity confirmed IMF agent, and then it started playing the Mission Impossible theme on the Sonos, which was actually surprisingly difficult, because getting it to do multiple things off one trigger, you can actually do this with IFT, but you need to like use their like developer platform to hack it together. So because I had it doing speaking a phrase, playing music, and also sending a text message to her where it gave her the a link for where she could put the puzzle answers in once she had solved them. Because I made a little page on my WordPress blog using the WordPress forms to have like an answer checker, essentially. So, yeah, so there was a technological component to all of this that every time I started thinking like, oh, could I do something cool with this? I would then spend a long time trying to figure out how to make it work perfectly. So that was a lot of fun, and she had a great time, fortunately, and was game to solve all the puzzles, and she was really excited because we had been on a bit of a Mission Impossible kick recently, and she grew up with watching the old versions of the TV show. So for her, that was great. But yes, it did end with an ice cream cake and an agreement to get engaged. So that's where we are now. It's very exciting.
That's great. I love, I want to know more at some point. I mean, that's really cool that you did, that you integrated all that stuff. I really like that. And integrating, that is brave too, to integrate voice assistants. Oh.
The worst part is, so somewhat tricky was, IFT has an SMS edition, but it only lets you send SMSs to your own number or to a number you designate. They have some integration with something called ClickSend, which I thought might be a solution where I could just send SMSs, but it's really intended for like bulk SMS, and they don't want you to send stuff from your own number. You need to like pay them to have a number they create. And I was like, that's not worth it. Like that's too complicated. And so essentially what I ended up doing was I had to authorize her phone on IFT so they could send text messages to her. But I had to do that when she wasn't paying attention, because otherwise she would, you have to like get a code and like enter the code on the website. And so I fortunately was able to do that while she wasn't paying attention. But then after that point, I could no longer test the workflow because it would trigger everything.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, I just got to trust that this is gonna work. You know, 3 days from now when I actually need to do this. And fortunately it did, it all went off without a hitch. I had tested it enough beforehand that it was pretty solid, and it was complex, but I wasn't asking it to do too much heavy lifting, and I tried to program in contingencies and backups wherever I could. But yeah, it was definitely at times a little bit worrisome that something would not go quite right. But there were definitely other puzzles that even with just physical objects in the world, I was more worried about. There was a whole one in a bookstore which relied on having certain books being there. And then so I was like there day of, like checking to make sure all the right books were in the right places.
Yeah. It all worked. It all worked.
It all worked. Thank God.
You know what else is working pretty well right now? That is a segue.
What's that?
It's Apple. That's the best I
can
do.
I can see why they pay you the big bucks.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. The Apple results we should talk about, because that's a thing that happened this week.
$1 trillion.
Yep, they made a trillion. Nope, that's not it.
Nope, that's not how that works.
They are worth $1 trillion-ish if you take their... Somebody wrote in asking for us to cover that on Upgrade next week, and I was like, I'm not quite sure what we would say. First off, because I don't really care about investing, you know, stuff. I don't cover Apple as a stock, right? But it is literally outstanding shares of stock times the stock price equals $1 trillion, which is a milestone in a certain way, but it's kind of irrelevant, although it is an opportunity, like anniversaries are an opportunity to look back, and it's an opportunity to talk about how Apple was almost out of business in 1997, and now 21 years later they're the most valuable company in the world.
Right. I liked, was it Gruber who pointed out in his blog that like extra little bit at the end of the valuation was like their worth in the mid-90s?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's kind of mind-blowing when you think about it from that perspective.
The .002 trillion. Then in 96, Apple was worth $2 billion.
Right. I mean, and of course, the economy as a whole has gotten larger in the meantime, and there's all sorts of things. But yeah, it's still pretty incredible.
It's a milestone. And that most of Apple's worth has actually been built with Steve Jobs out of the picture, right? Like, Tim Cook, as CEO, I think took over, and it was at $300 billion, something like a 350, like somewhere in there, which is also, I mean, it says a lot about it's not just sort of like how well Apple has done, but it is a bunch of different factors, and of course a lot of people will point out that they think that the Apple stock is actually undervalued. So that's the other funny part of it.
It's a well-oiled machine, I think we get that much. I mean, it's one of those things too that kind of beggars disbelief in some ways, because of the, like, you know, everyone for years has been like, oh, eventually it will come down, right? And it just never has. And to me, you know, looking out from the perspective of like a narrative, right, like you feel like at some point normally for the comeback story, if you'd watch a movie with the comeback story, the movie would end at this point.
Oh yeah, the movie
would have
ended.
They came back. 10 years ago.
When the iPhone got announced, right? And it'd be like, then roll the credits, right?
And then they have the little text on the screen, like, Apple went on to be worth blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then, like, yeah, that would just be the end.
So the challenge is a couple of things. One is, look at Microsoft, right? Like, Microsoft is not as relevant as they were in many ways. They're certainly not as cool as they were. They were never cool. I'm sorry, I take it back. Microsoft was never cool, but they were, like, super powerful and
they
successful.
They were ubiquitous.
That is what they were. They're never cool. Just look at Bill Gates. Come on. Is he cool? No. But is he a billionaire? Yes. That's what he's got. But they're still around, and they just keep making money, right? I mean, it's not like... I think there was an argument that once you get so big, you can't... You can become irrelevant, but it's hard for you to just go away because you're so big. Like, IBM was so big that although IBM is not particularly relevant anymore and it's basically a consulting firm, the fact is, still around.
Yeah, it's not going to die. There are plenty of other giant firms that have been around for AT&T, right? Like, you would have thought AT&T post, you know, the breakups of the Bells and all that stuff would have gone away, but no.
Well, it did, and it got reformed, and it's still with us.
So, like,
never really went out of style.
Corporations never really die, Jason. They just declare bankruptcy and then get merged or acquired with something
else. Yes, and are reformed. So Apple, there was a stat at one point that's probably changed as Apple's value and cash hoard and you know, and everything else and how much money it spends have changed. But there was at one point somebody did the math that Apple could just literally cease operations, continue to pay its staff, and run for like 70 years or something like that. Like, literally, they had so much money that they could just go on with not making any new money. Like, that would be the truth of it. Now, they've said that they're trying to get to a cash neutral position. They're going to stop. They're doing a lot of stock buybacks, which have increased the value. That's one of the reasons that the value of the company has increased. And they're trying to reduce the amount of cash that they're accumulating. But, you know, the fact is, it's actually kind of hard.
Because how do you spend that much money? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do with it?
What a problem to have. I'm making money so fast, I can't spend it all. No.
I mean, even you're buying back billions of dollars worth of stock and you're investing in R&D and infrastructure and capital improvements and all of that. Like, I don't even remember how many billions of dollars they have, but well over $200 billion.
Yeah.
Like, you know. At this point, at a certain point, it's like, do you just start giving money to, like, countries that need it, right? Like, I don't know what the answer is to that.
What do you think about the Mac stuff of all of the stuff in the results that came out this week? The Mac, which I was reminded, you know, last year they had the MacBook Pros out at WWDC, and this year they came out a month later, which means that their sales in the year over it's a what they call, I think, a tough compare in the financial. Terms because in the jargon because they had a big product launch last year and this year they didn't. It happened afterward, and so I find it valuable to look at that and say, okay, imagine the state of the Mac in June, which is nothing new at all. Is it any wonder that Mac sales were down? But it does feel like the Mac is the most troubled part of Apple's business right now.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because for a long time, as we were covering this, the Mac, it was slowly increasing, but it often was in that like 4 million unit range.
Sure. It was always doing a little bit better than the market. And they would frequently have sort of like more Macs sold this quarter than ever before because they were kind of right at that high point and just kind of like bobbing around in there.
Yeah. So from that standpoint, it is a bit of a dip. And I think a lot of it can be attributed not just to the fact that the MacBook Pros came out late, but like this year in general has been woefully short on Mac updates.
Right.
And some of that may just be a weird confluence of events of where those product lines are structured and how when they expected those updates to come out. It may just be that the MacBook Pros were not ready to go by June. The iMac is scheduled for the fall. The Mac Mini and the Mac Pro are both kind of MIA, but expected to have, you know, they're kind of doing we're product transitions, you know, like those are things that are in the pipeline, but they're not ready to go yet because perhaps they're getting a more substantive overhaul, which means what's kind of left, right? Like, you have the weird sort of MacBook Air question. And that one is, again, I think that's a weird situation where they haven't figured out or executed exactly what they want to do yet. So in a way, it's both yes and no. Yes, it is a little troublesome right now because we're at this weird inflection point. But no, in the sense that I think long term, things will be okay. It's just that we have hit this weird dip or perfect storm of all these different products not quite being ready to go, because to a certain extent, Apple's trying to figure out what is the Mac right now.
Yeah. And they may know, right? Like, that's the funny thing, is that this is a lagging
time.
A lagging indicator. Like, I think based on where the Mac was, especially in June before the even new MacBook Pros came out, like, are we surprised? But it may be that they kind of figured out what they're going to do with the Mac and what role the Mac serves, and got enough political, you know, buy-in from everywhere for them to do that. That may have been last summer. That may have been when they called that roundtable last spring. But it takes time, right? It takes time.
And we were told that the Mac Pro wasn't going to appear this year, essentially.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one that's clearly like a thing they're working on that's just not ready yet. And that's about the most transparent as they ever get with these things. So, you know, there have been rumors of a new redesigned Mac Mini, but it's not like Apple is talking, and it's not like there's a time frame attached to that. So I think, you know, it's worrisome from the perspective of those of us who love the Mac, because, there's an absence of evidence, right? Which is not the evidence of absence, but it is enough to make people like, oh, what's going to happen? But, you know, I think from a large standpoint, the Mac is not a huge part of their business. It's a part, but it's not iPhone huge, obviously. So they can afford to, if they, you know, weather out that storm without it being really a huge impact on either their bottom line or their market position. Because let's also face it, all those analysts who like to talk about Apple and like fulminate all the over what's going on pay little to no attention to the Mac. They're looking at the iPhone. They're looking at growth and services.
Yeah, it's 10% of their total revenue, plus financial analysts are looking for growth. And there a lot of growth potential
in the Mac? Yeah.
I mean, there's some. There's always going to be some, just because the PC market, even though it's shrinking, you know, there's an argument to be made that Apple could find a new way to chip in on Microsoft sales. But realistically, like, the Mac is not where Apple's growth is coming from financially, or even in terms of just from a product sales perspective. I think most people would believe that the iPhone and the iPad have more sales potential growth over time than the Mac does. And that brings me to my other thing that I was going to mention about Apple and doing all this stuff, which is you've got the smartphone business. And this keeps up coming up when people talk about Apple and hitting a billion or a trillion, is, which are not even a real number.
Billion
anyway,
here, billion there.
Whatever.
Pretty soon you're talking about real money.
$1 trillion is, the storylines are often like, oh, but they need to remain innovative and what's their next iPhone and all that. I think the truth of the Apple story in, you know, its simplest fashion is the smartphone is the single greatest consumer product of our lifetimes. And Apple found a way to own 20% of it, and it's the most lucrative 20%. And, you know, we want to make it more complicated. You want there to be a bigger arc. You want the story, as you said, you know, where does the story go from here?
Yeah.
I think the truth is probably way more boring, which is the smartphone was going to change everything. And Apple was not even lucky. I mean, maybe there's luck involved in everything, but Apple had all the pieces and was at a position in the 2000s after the iPod, where they were able to define what a smartphone was and have it stick in a way that its predecessors didn't. And as a result, and I think even people who are, you know, much prefer Android or really like what Android is doing would probably admit this point, are reaping the benefits of being first with a lot of these concepts and being able to maintain that and having high quality software and hardware on the iPhone to make, you know, to have this huge profit percentage of the smartphone market. And like, that's, I mean, maybe it'll happen again, but my inclination is to say it's very unlikely that we're going to see a product that's just as huge, just as revolutionary, where you literally go from none of them to every human being on Earth has one in the course of 20 years or 15 years or how, you know, however long you want to say before it's completely saturated, because we're not quite there, but in parts of the world we are already. Like, I know that's really boring to have that be Apple's story, is that basically they were in the right place with the right, not luck, but like they were also in the right place at the right time with the right features and the legacy of the next move. Like all of these things set them up. And then the product vision of Steve Jobs and the people who worked with at Apple on that project, like all of that led to them having that moment. And that moment unlocked the fact that they were going to be a $1 trillion company if they played their cards right. And, you know, it got them in essentially on the ground floor of one of the biggest consumer product categories ever.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So now they're a $1 trillion company. And they've also got the Mac that's 10% of their business. And they've also got the iPad that's 12% of their business. And they've got the growing services business. But 2/3 of their business or more is iPhone hardware sales. And then you can imagine that most of the other product lines other than iPhone and iPad, you know, 2/3 of their value is probably stems from the iPhone in
right.
some way.
I mean, and like you said, the story is kind of boring in that it's not like, it's not like the faucet ever gets like turned off one day and everyone's like,
right.
oh, we just don't need smartphones
no,
anymore,
no,
right? Like
right.
For the next ten years.
Or that 10 years from now, they're going to be, it's like a television. It's like, it's not like they
yeah.
invented the television in the 40s and then in the 50s, they said, well, we've got a new thing now instead of television. It's like, no,
right.
we
right.
still have television. Like those things don't come across the pipe that often. So maybe
right.
there
exactly.
will be some direct brain interface magic thing that totally changes everything. Maybe, but they don't come off. If it does happen, it will still be unusual and unexpected, because it's a rare thing. And Apple was in the right place at the right time, just like Microsoft was in the right place at the right time for the personal computer. And they had their
yeah.
skills and they had their product
well,
and they had and Windows
and
did incredibly well. And that's why Microsoft
right.
still has all the money.
And it's not to say that you don't have smaller markets here and there that they're taking advantage of, like you said, with the iPad or the Mac or, you know, the Apple TV, right? Like all of these things are interesting developments, but none of them are to the level of importance, right? They're not even like, you know, exponentially in the same field as the iPhone. And so, you know, having all those different markets, there's going to be smaller innovations that are going to keep coming just because of the nature of the world that we live in. But I think you're right that the smartphone as a single product that really just changed the entire world, without sounding too, you know, too hyperbolistic,
hyperbolic,
that's
probably
the word I
but
for.
I don't yeah but I think yeah I don't think
but
it is
I agree, I 100% agree.
I mean,
like
you know, at some point everybody's gonna have a supercomputer that's connected with a fast connection to a global information network that fits in their pocket. And like that sounds awfully revolutionary, and that's our world. It's
sure.
changed our culture.
Right.
It will continue to change our culture. It's a huge thing. And they
and
have
like
a little
said,
slice of that market that is very profitable. And like, that's all you need to get a $1 trillion company. I'm sorry. It really is that simple. If you
yeah.
happen like simple, haha, but still that in the aggregate, yes, that simple. The
right.
iPhone
and,
did it.
And in the long term, you know, I agree, like certainly your biggest risk is saturation. But even with all of that, people buy new phones. Like, you know, that may slow down eventually just because maybe phones will last longer, or maybe there won't be as many things to incentivize people to upgrade their phones. But at a certain point, people are going to break their phones are going to get old and be too slow. Sooner or later, you get that you need to replace your phone. And so I think, you know, people worry about growth in iPhone sales, and sure, that's totally fair. Like, it will not continue growing at the level it did in the early days. I don't think that it can. But that's not to say it either won't grow or will start shrinking. Because, again, once you've invented this, once you've let, you know, the genie out of the lamp, like, it's not going back. People aren't going to suddenly decide to stop buying phones.
No, it's just not. It's not going to. Well, they would require that reinvention, something completely different.
Right.
I saw
the odds of that happening again are so.
On, I want to say Bloomberg, could have been CNBC, but on one of those channels that I only turn on in the 30 minutes preceding Apple results to get a little bit of the vibe as they're talking about what Wall Street's expectations are, they had this analyst on And what he said, and I think this was just as the results had come in, what he said was basically, Apple's on a razor's edge. If they ever ship a version of the iPhone that is not good, everybody will just buy an Android phone instead, and they'll never come back, and that'll be the end of their business.
That's not how that works. I thought,
that is so bizarre a thought process. And I think what's underlying it is his feeling like, if they only knew, these are a bunch of shills, you know, they're stooges, they're cultists or whatever, and they're like, the moment, like, it's such a fragile thing, like, people are ready to just abandon Apple in droves.
Remember how many millions of people have an iPhone, and that immediately, that's like saying that all of a sudden, like, all of the people who voted one way in an election would just suddenly decide to vote the other way.
What he's saying,
no, that's not what that happens.
Essentially, what he's saying is that nobody has loyalty. There's no brand loyalty. There's no loyalty to the iPhone. There's no customer satisfaction that couldn't be destroyed by. And then there's this question of, like, well, yeah, I mean, I suppose you could say, what if Apple made a phone so bad that it was like a terrible experience and they exploded and stuff like that? But you know what? People are buying Samsung phones even now. So even that, and that Samsung stuff isn't differentiated from other Android phones, and Apple stuff is. Anyway, it was my point is not to macalope this guy, but just to say, like, that's stupid. Like, you know, Apple's customer sat degrade? Could people feel unhappy with Apple? Yes. I mean, we've detailed a lot of the reasons why, although I think most of those don't apply to the iPhone. And most of those don't even apply to the iPad, where Tim will tell us customer sat is very high. Maybe on the Mac a little bit, but like most of Apple's business is incredibly stable with incredibly loyal customers. And although some people don't get it and might believe, like, oh, well, they could walk away, it's like, I don't see it. I think it would take a prolonged effort to get Apple's customers to abandon them. Like, they would have to try really hard to be bad to them, just and make bad products and frustrate people. And I don't see it happening, which is, it's a little scary, right? Because what I'm essentially saying is Apple's going to be wildly successful to a certain degree, maybe not to Wall Street's, if their sales end up flat, maybe not to Wall Street's satisfaction, but like throwing off huge amounts of profit every single quarter for forever, basically. You know, that's easy to be complacent. What do they do? What do they do? Unfortunately, what they're doing is they're really ramping up their R&D budget, like, massively, because they know,
well, again,
they don't want to get caught flat-footed.
And they have off-footed? The money, as we just pointed out. Know. Like, I mean, if you're gonna, that's a great place to spend those hundreds of billions of dollars, is if you can afford it, having people just get a chance to work kind of on whatever could be next. You play enough, you know, odds, maybe one or two of those things ends up being, you know, a pretty substantive product at some point down the road. But I mean, why not spread it around? Like, at this point, if you need to invest in something, that's a great thing to invest in. And I agree, like, the Wall Street world, as we've discussed many, many times in the past, is highly divorced from both what we do and, I would argue, reality. You know, in only in a Wall Street mindset would you say that, like, yeah, their sales were flat, but they still sold 30 million iPhones or whatever. Like, 30 million, yeah, that's nothing. Like, it's because it didn't go up, right? Yeah, I don't know. It's a world that is very alien to me, and I don't quite understand the quote unquote logic of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the truth of I follow some science people on Twitter, science media people, and the truth is we live in a world where a lot of the media organizations feel they need, you know, the two sides of an issue thing to be represented. And one of my people that I know is a space journalist. She got asked to be on a BBC show about the moon landing, and they were going to have her and somebody who thinks it's a hoax. And she's like, no. And in fact, she was like talking to the producers and like, you cannot do this. This is stupid. Do not give those people oxygen. And they actually changed the thing and didn't have them on. And that was smart. But, you know, that sort of thing happens. And you kind of have to say no. I feel like that guy was, I mean, this is Rob Enderle, right? Like, this is Rob Enderle exists to say the opposite of what makes sense, because he knows somebody will say, well, we want to have an opposing view on something. And so it's like, literally, I think, and forgive me if Rob Enderle somehow is mysteriously listening to this, but like, if somebody paid him to go on TV and say that it's colder in the summertime, or that black is white, or what, you know, whatever, or that cats are more trainable than dogs, or I don't even know what it would be, he would do it. If you paid him enough, he would do it, because that's kind of his career, is just being a contrarian. And, you know, and the fact is, there's a market for that, but it's dumb. I mean, that's things. There's a lot of things. This is the other thing. There was a piece that somebody linked to on Twitter that I saw that was about Apple reaching a trillion. And it was basically like, hey, congratulations, Apple. You reached $1 trillion because you treat your workers. You've outsourced all your supply chain to Asia, and you treat the workers there so bad that they try to kill themselves. And you pollute the environment. And it was just like this litany of things that this guy was angry about Apple. And like, in there, I think, you know, should we talk about, there are so many things in specific to criticize about Apple, but what ends up happening is people are like, oh, it's just marketing. No, it's dumb. Or they're going to, it's like, no. Get off of that. Don't start arguing fundamental premises of Apple. Start arguing what they do. Like, start saying, if you're making so much money, maybe you should change the way your supply chain is handled, or maybe you should pay the workers there more, or maybe you should allow more of your employees to participate in the, you know, whatever it is. Like, there are plenty of things that any big company does that you could criticize. You should pay more in taxes, whatever. But instead, you get these jokers who are just there to say, you know, that the sky is green. It's like, what?
Yeah, it's like when they had that time, they had Galileo on a talk show and the church, and they just made them argue about whether the earth goes around the sun or
and
not.
Yet it moves. Yeah, I don't know. Weird world we live in. Funny world we live in.
It is. It's the only one we got. So let's
I've got an astronaut here and also a flat earther. Let's let them debate the subject. That's not gonna happen.
You know what's really funny with flat earthers is when you just push them off the edge. It's pretty hilarious, and they're all like, no, I'm gonna fall off the earth. Good times.
Anything else before we go on our Friday afternoon?
You know, there's not much. We're in August. God, it's August. So we're about 6 weeks out from there being news. But I will just add that I've been using the... I finally did install iOS 12 beta on my phone and the watchOS 5 beta on my Apple Watch, which I was a little bit buggy at first. It didn't want to acknowledge that it was paired with my phone. And certain, I would unlock it and certain watch faces would be fine. And other watch faces, I would like swipe to another watch face and be like, oh, it's still locked. And I'm like, it's not. It really isn't. So that was an interesting bug. But it seems to have resolved itself. I do keep looking for somebody to walkie-talkie with, but sadly, nobody else seems to have it installed. So
yeah, I've been
reluctant with myself.
I'll tell you, the moment that that Mark Arment does the Overcast beta that, uses watchOS 5 stuff to let me... you know, actually use my podcast on my watch. Like the moment that he and again, I don't even know if that is something that he's done yet, but assuming that that's what's coming, that'll let me put a beta on my watch. But until then, I have not done it.
I will say I did like the automatic workout detection stuff. I really like that. So, you know, I walk down to the coffee shop every day, and this morning when I did it, it was like, hey, it looks like you're working out and taking a walk. Like, funny, the lag time on it is just enough that it notified me, like, when I got to the coffee shop. But if you say yes after that, it immediately has already, like, it was already tracking your calories and everything. So you can say yes, and it retroactively adds it. And then you can immediately stop it, which is nice, because I don't usually track that, because I'm like, oh, this is a pain. But if it was going to offer to do it for me, sure, no problem. Likewise, you know, I got home after walking home from lunch today, and I had started a, you know, the workout at some point during my walk, and I got home and I was putting around, and it's like, hey, it looks like you're done. Do you want to finish your workout? It's like, oh, thank you so much. Cause I constantly forget to do that when I'm at the gym or whatever. So I've been pretty impressed with what I've seen of it so far, excepting for that one little hiccup at the beginning.
Huh.
But other than that, it's been pretty solid.
Thanks for giving me so much credit for, letting you borrow an Apple Watch. Series 2.
No, I mean, it has been interesting because it does, like, I had already been in the planning to buy whatever watch came out this year, unless it looked god awful. Because, you know, coming from an original one, I figured, like, that would be a big step up. But it's nice. I appreciate the Series 2 you've given me, because it let me get a taste of all those other features. So,
yeah, I'm glad that was... it was in a drawer here, so that worked out.
Cloth and dust. Yeah. So, between that and iOS 12, which I do think... I think I mentioned on the Rebound or recording that we did this week, it works... The Face ID on iOS 12 is way better for me than on iOS 11. Don't know why. I had a lot of problems with it on iOS 11, and it's been much smoother on iOS 12, or at least much more like other people have described it working to me, where it fails much less. And I really like that they changed the gesture for... they just redid the workflow of, like, when it fails, you can keep swiping up, essentially, and it'll just try again. So it's much less janky than in iOS 11. So thumbs up on that. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know... It's Friday afternoon, so we should probably go.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's good.
We posted a bunch of stuff this week, though. People should check it out. Lots of... we did our... you know, I have charts.
Mm.
Charts. I did a Tim transcription. You talked about tapbacks, which I thought was really good. We didn't talk about that, but I never really thought about it, but you're absolutely right. I want more tapbacks in iMessage. Like, I want emoji reactions from Slack in iMessage, because I love tapbacks.
It's the only feature I use.
I use it all the time.
It's the only iMessage thing I use, and I use it pretty regularly. So, yeah, expand that.
Yeah. Oh, and I posted your thing about TunnelBlick, but just to say to those people who are members here that we're going to run some, like, as sort of teasers to promote people getting the newsletter, we're going to run some old newsletter articles every so often on the site and say, hey, this was in the newsletter. You should subscribe to the newsletter. So you may see some things that are familiar if you were reading the newsletter. And we did a new newsletter this week, too, on top of everything else that we did.
We did really that. Firing on all cylinders.
I detailed
even in the summer.
All the tech on my vacation, which I'm going to try to turn into a slightly different version for the website. But that's my official sort of, like, here's what I've been doing. And then the other thing I've been doing is I started working on my new edition of my book about photos, which is interesting because I get to see what's changed in photos. And the funny thing this year is that most of the changes are on iOS and not on the Mac, which is kind of disappointing as a person who spends a lot of time in photos on the Mac.
You can cut out your whole section on photo books.
Yeah, well, I did that. That was one of the first things I did, but I'm probably going to have to write, and this will also lead to an article on the site, I think, which is I realized that I need to basically test out these things, not only the building the books, but then also how they look when you order them and they're printed. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, in the next few weeks, I think I'm going to build some photo books from these third-party sites. The problem is that I think I don't know whether it's a bug in Mojave or whether they changed something for Mojave, but I can't get the current versions of these photo book building plugins to load in Mojave. Mm. So I'm going to have to go back into High Sierra and then do the photo book testing from there.
Yeah.
But,
Probably maybe some sort of signing thing.
Yeah,
probably.
I had a moment too. I tried to use the Shutterfly plugin, and it's hilarious because that one's really bad. Maybe they're changing it, but like Shutterfly's thing, they want you to upload your photos to Shutterfly, and it's like, no, I'm in the photos interface now. I mean, they can build something that does it in the background, but it seems like a really misguided thing.
I'm a little surprised that Apple decided that they didn't want to control that part of the process. I mean, I kind of understand that it was something they didn't really need to do, but the question is really whether the stuff that replaces it is up to their standards.
I think they figured that, and I know having talked to the Apple PR people, I think they figured that with 2 years of this photo plugin thing and the potential to take over the business from Apple and win the business, that they would get people who would compete to, you know, do a good job with the photo building plugins, and then there would be competition. And I think that will probably happen, but it's just not all there yet.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, because I made a photo book a few weeks ago and it turned out just fine. But
yeah, you got to
also
the end of the month to do an Apple photo book,
right.
And then they go away.
I did one, and
John
one
Syracuse
of my cousins
is doing all of them, the photo books.
One of my cousins did a Shutterfly one, and I also thought it turned out fine. Like, they're different aesthetics, you know, slightly different approaches, but they're both, they you know, it's not, printing is kind of a thing that, you know, we've done that. We know how to do that.
Yeah, that's yep, it's true. Oh, hey, it's very exciting. My daughter is here and she's waving at me. This is the No, she's asking if she should put the Do Not Disturb on the door. But no, this is the Six Color Secret podcast where we don't care if we get interrupted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, really? Why?
Because, I don't know, because the listeners demand verisimilitude for
They want the diegetic sound of our lives.
How can I help you, Jamie?
Oh, I was just... It's like a personal thing. Okay. Would it be bad to hang out with my friend tonight?
Hang out with your friend tonight? No, but not stay.
To be here, like, with me and stuff?
Oh, no, it's fine.
It's fine?
Yeah. Okay, goodbye.
Yeah, you can't turn it down. She's on a podcast. I mean, yeah. She's asked in front of lots of people.
That's right. All right.
There's, you know, absolutely no way to.
See,
to
you never know who's going to show up at the end of a Six Colors podcast, people.
Yeah,
you never know.
Speaking of which, my fiance is walking in the door right now, so you never know who might show up on a Six Colors podcast.
Yeah, it could happen at the end, at the very end especially.
Yeah, as we're wrapping up, it seems like it's like we pulled down the curtains and everybody just like stormed the stage.
That's right. Why are you not done yet? Okay.
The faithful fans of the Six Colors.
See?
All right, well,
we should this is getting out of hand.
Thanks everybody for being a subscriber. We appreciate it. And before anything else weird happens, bye Dan.
Bye Jason.
Bye Jason. Bye.